If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
107 on 720 WGN. Joining us on the phone right now is Senator Dick Durbin. Hi, Senator Durbin. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. I wish Happy New Year to all your listeners as well.
We thank you very much for coming on the phone. We know it's been a busier than usual end of the year for Congress. What is the latest on whether or not there will be an additional $1,400 in stimulus relief?
We'll know at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Senator McConnell has the authority to call the bill that passed the House for passage in the Senate. If he does, we've got a chance. But if he delays it or puts in a substitute, I'm afraid that he will be responsible for the decision not to send this money.
Senator McConnell has proposed his own legislation, which would include $1,400, and two, they're saying poison pills. There's no chance Democrats will go along with what he wants, I'm guessing.
It isn't just a matter of Democrats going along. We have an expiration date for this Congress, and it's Sunday at noon. A new Congress comes in. Anything that we're going to do with this issue, with the matter that's already passed the House, has to be accomplished within that time frame. Senator McConnell knows it. To put in a brand new bill with a brand new theory and new controversy into it is simply to delay it indefinitely and make it impossible to send families the help they need.
So is this Senator McConnell's way of stopping this without completely upsetting President Trump? Because he's able to tell him, I'm asking for what you wanted. They should approve this too.
Yes, I suppose that's what he's thinking, but it doesn't work. And the American people know better. We asked yesterday, Senator Schumer, the Democratic leader, asked on the floor, let's move to this bill immediately and pass it. Senator McConnell objected. So we know what's at stake here. We know that families that are desperate for this help and need it to make the mortgage payments or car payments or pay off the bills or feed the family are desperate to get this money. Senator McConnell has it within his power to call that matter this afternoon at 5 o'clock Washington time. I'm confident the Democrats are going to support it. I think we can pass it.
A lot of concern, at least being said, that the reason holding back on the $1,400 is because of the deficit, because we've printed so much money this year in pandemic relief that this bill is going to come down the road. Why do you say that this is more important than the worries of what happens with the deficit?
That's a legitimate concern, but there's an equally, if not more important concern, and that is what to do with this ailing economy, with the millions of people who are out of work, with the small businesses that can't reopen, what to do with them during this crisis. The chairman of the Federal Reserve says, don't take your foot off the accelerator. We're going to plunge into a recession, which will add even more debt to future generations. So I'm in for the stimulus. I'm for helping these families. Those who are desperate, facing layoffs and unemployment, are going to turn around and spend this money instantly. They're not going to salt it away for another day. That money spent into the economy will help us recover.
What's the latest with the National Defense Authorization Act? There was headlines yesterday that Bernie Sanders might put a stop to that vote happening unless Senator McConnell brings the other bill to the floor.
Well, I certainly hope he doesn't. We were brought back here in this unusual circumstance between Christmas and New Year's because Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, one senator, objected to passing the conference committee on this military spending bill. And so we came back for that, and then this new matter of $2,000 per person came up in the process. I think we are at a point where we're going to be able to pass the defense authorization bill in short order without any objection. I hope that's the case, because it includes a lot of things. It includes pay raise for our military. We certainly think they deserve that. It includes better resources for fighting off the Russian attacks on our secure intelligence sources. There are a lot of things in here we need to get done, and I think we're at a point where we can push back against Senator Paul's decision.
When it comes to things like, this bill being put forth or that bill being put forth, a lot of the things that President Trump complained about in his speech last weekend and why he was not wanting to sign the bill was money going to other countries, money going to other things here within the states within this bill. Do you think that's a legitimate complaint?
No, and I'll tell you why. The list of requests for foreign aid came from the Trump administration. The State Department in the Trump administration sent us a list of things they thought could be well spent overseas to stabilize situations, to help countries that are facing laws of their own. It was a limited list, but it was one created by the administration. We gave them their list back, and then the president complained, "Why? How could Congress come up with these ideas?" We came up with the ideas from members of his own administration.
Senator Durbin, there is a runoff election in just a few days in Georgia, which will determine control of the Senate. How much is posturing playing into what's going on with these bills? Is that a factor at all in how the two sides are looking at things? Is it playing in Georgia?
Of course. And when Senator McConnell switched his position and said, I'm going to favor a COVID relief bill, he told the Republican senators it's going to help Kelly and Dave, the two Republican senators who are up for re-election in Georgia. So clearly that is part of the motivation on both sides. We would both like to see victories, Democrats and Republicans, and we can't. One will and one won't. But if the two Democratic nominees win, then we have a tie Senate, 50-50, and the tie is broken by the Vice President, Kamala Harris, who would break it in favor of the Democrats. So there's a lot at stake in Georgia. And even this $2,000 payment, the two senators, Republican senators, have come out publicly for this payment. And now their Republican leader in the Senate is trying to kill it with this alternative bill. The intrigue around here is captivating.
Is the belief on the Democratic side that the money passing would help the Democratic senators who are running?
They've endorsed it as well. In fact, all four candidates have endorsed it. And the question is, which political party is going to support it on the floor of the Senate? I think it'll be the Democrats and not the Republicans.
Senator Durbin, I was posturing yesterday on the radio that possibly a 50-50 Senate is not the greatest thing for Democrats because you don't have full control. It's better than not having control at all. But now every single one of those Democratic senators has to be on board. And maybe we get more of kind of what we had with these last bills, that everybody's getting a little something. Is that a worry, or is that the type of thing that should be happening?
Listen, I'll tell you, I'll take a 50-50 Democratic Senate any day of the week. It means control of the committees by the Democrats, and that's a critically important part of it. But bottom line, you put your finger on, you can't do anything significant in the Senate without bipartisan support. And even if we have a 50-50 majority on the Democratic side, when it comes to the critical issues, the important issues to President Biden, we're going to have Republican support. I think we can get it. There were a group of eight of us, four Democrats, four Republican senators, who got together a month or 5 weeks ago and started writing this COVID relief bill, which was ultimately passed and will be signed by the president, has been signed by the president. I think that bipartisan coalition is an indication of good things to come. There are a lot of senators that are sick and tired of wasting their time in this place where we have an opportunity to help so many people. I think we can come up with alternatives, constructive compromises that'll move this country forward.
The Senate used to be a place of great debate. Has it become much less of that in the last decade?
Oh, it is a shadow of its former self. This year, this calendar year, we have debated 29 amendments on the floor of the Senate, other than the impeachment trial itself. Last year, we debated 22 amendments. That is dramatically down from the numbers that we've done in the past. In President Obama's first year, we had 270 amendments on the floor of the Senate in 1 year. We did a lot of legislating. We created the Affordable Care Act, which has given millions of Americans health insurance, for example. We reformed Wall Street. We passed a stimulus bill. And we were active, deliberating, amending bills and voting on the floor. We haven't done that for years under the Trump administration and Senator McConnell. I hope we can get back to those good old days.
Senator Durbin, under a Democratic Congress, for our listeners here in the state of Illinois, a Democratic Congress, we have you and we have Senator Tammy Duckworth, so we have two Democrats in the Senate. What would that mean for the state of Illinois for Democrats to have control of the Congress with both of our senators being Democrats?
Well, I certainly hope it means more hearty effort, if you will, at the vaccination program. We have infections and deaths from coronavirus at an all-time high and a vaccination rate that is entirely too low. We're not going to protect America until more people are vaccinated. So that has to be done. Priority number one. Number two is getting this economy moving again. Senator Duckworth and I are committed to elements, for example, an infrastructure bill. In 4 years, President Trump promised an infrastructure bill, never passed one. In fact, only proposed one early in his administration. We need to pass that to build the roads and bridges and highways and airports that build our economy and create good paying jobs. That's just for starters.
What about for you, Senator Durbin? I believe I've read that you would like to head the Judiciary Committee should you get control of the Senate.
Yes, I've waited 22 years for that opportunity. I think I'm ready. I wanted to accept that assignment on behalf not just of the Democrats, but the Republicans. Chuck Grassley is a lead Republican from Iowa. He and I are friends. We have passed significant historic legislation together. I can work with him. I think the Judiciary Committee can do a good job for the American people.
And what about back here in the state of Illinois? I do want to ask you, because you weighed in on this a few weeks ago, on Mike Madigan, who seems to be having no sense of wanting to step back in any way, shape, or form. How do you view the Democratic Party here in the state of Illinois right now?
Well, it's true. The day after the election, I was quizzed on Chicago Tonight, and I was asked about Mike Madigan. I just watched ads for months against Democratic candidates for Congress and the Supreme Court and legislature, and everyone had the same theme. They were all running ads against Mike Madigan. And I said publicly then, I don't believe he is serving the Democratic Party of Illinois well by continuing on as its chairman. He is the issue. He should be helping these candidates get elected. He is the anchor that they're trying to carry around to a victory in November. I said that, and others joined me, Governor Pritzker, Senator Duckworth joined me, and since then a number of members of the House. There's going to be a showdown in this issue come January, when the House of Representatives in Springfield elects its next speaker. I have not called anyone or urged them to do anything. I've stated my position publicly. Now it's up to the members of the House of Representatives in Springfield to make the decision.
Senator Durbin, I imagine you're a longtime acquaintance, if not friend, of President-elect Biden. You wouldn't be interested in maybe a new position in a cabinet?
Well, I don't think the ambassadorship to Italy is going to be open to me, but I sure would.
Is that what you're holding up for?
I know my wife would jump at it, and it would be hard for me to say no. So I think I'm going to stick with this job for the time being.
Oh, that sounds good. We appreciate that. What's your crystal ball say for the year ahead? Are we going to Cubs and Sox games this summer? How happy are you with the vaccine rollout so far?
Vaccine rollout's way too slow. I talked to Governor Pritzker 2 days ago. He said the Washington people just said to him, do your best, try to figure out each state's response. There's no coordinated effort. And sadly, only about 2 million people have been vaccinated. They estimated 20 million would be vaccinated before the end of December. We're going way too slow, and Joe Biden said as much yesterday. We've got to do better. When it comes to baseball, now this is an interesting year. The Cubs trading away some of their best talent, and the White Sox loaded with talent. Yeah. So this is going to be an interesting year.
Could you pass a bill real quick to stop the Cubs from just giving away everything and like get them to compete this year?
I don't know if I can stop them. They seem to be on a selling spree.
Oh, man. Real quick. So you're mentioning that the states have been left on their own now with the vaccinations. Also, at the very beginning of this pandemic, it was a real victory for states' rights because everybody was kind of on their own, grabbing the equipment, grabbing whatever they can. And it didn't necessarily work out as we would have liked. Once the Biden administration takes charge, will we get more of a concerted national effort to try to get the states to work better together, to all get together to stop the spread of COVID?
Boy, I hope so. And let me tell you, I can remember in February, March, and April, talking to Governor Pritzker almost every other day. He was telling me these outlandish stories of the lengths that he was going to get protective equipment for the healthcare workers in Illinois.
Yeah.
At one time, there was a rendezvous at a truck stop with a check to pick up a truckload of equipment that was desperately needed. It was just an outrage to think we had reached that point when lives were at stake. No, I think things are going to be different. Joe Biden said he's going to use the Defense Production Act. I wish that President Trump had done the same. I think this may help us in coming up with critical equipment.
Well, we're all pretty glad to say goodbye to the year 2020. I'm sure there's some highlights for you, but how will you spend New Year's Eve? You're going to social distance,
I know that.
Well, I may be
stuck here in the Capitol. I'm back in Washington waiting for this vote, and I want to be home. My wife and I can't have our family and kids and grandkids around. But we're celebrated together quietly, and we don't stay up too late. But I'd rather be back in Springfield or back in Chicago, sitting out here in Washington waiting for Senator McConnell to make a decision.
All right, Senator Dick Durbin, we always appreciate your time. Have a happy, healthy new year, and we look forward to much more from you in 2021.
You too, Matt. Thanks a lot.
All right, sir. Have a great day. Senator Dick Durbin from D.C. with the latest on what's going on with the COVID relief bill. As you can imagine, he sees things one way, and the Republican side, of course, would see things very differently on what they want done and how they're viewing things. But we shall see what happens next. 122-720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN 125. We'll have the news from Lauren Lapka coming up in just about 5 minutes. Lauren, have you checked your account? I know on the John Hansen In for Bob Surratt show this morning, they were all feverishly checking their bank accounts to see if any stimulus had run in there yet.
I have not checked. I'm actually really bad about that kind of stuff. It's like, if I don't look at it, I can't be depressed or happy about it. Which is probably really not sound advice. Don't do what I do.
Probably not, but still, I can totally understand where you're coming from. And then suddenly you go to take a 20 or so out of an ATM somewhere and you get the receipt and it says you have more than you thought. You're
right. Like, wow. It's like finding a $20 bill in your pocket.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. There's money. And then you try not to. What would you, so if you get, you know, $600 in stimulus money, are you going to pay down your credit card? Or are you going to go buy? You know, it's kind of found money. You know, listen, I don't mean to make light of it. For a lot of Americans, it's desperately needed, but we are working. So
right.
We have a paycheck. This is, you know, when it comes to us, it's to spur the economy a little bit and do things like that. What would you do with your $600?
I will use it to purchase more takeout food because I'm not somebody that likes to cook already. And it's just easier. So I'm also helping
supporting
local
the local economy,
yeah,
and the local restaurants. Yes, that's a very good thing. Good for you. I hope you get double on accident.
That would be great.
Yeah,
although I'm pretty sure they'd make me give it back.
They probably would, yeah. You never hear good endings to those they accidentally deposited $3 million in my account and I started spending it stories.
Right. They're really good about knowing when they paid you too much and yet never seem to care when they owe you money.
Yeah, isn't that funny? If they made a mistake,
yeah,
you'll
mm-hmm.
hound them for years. But if they gave you an extra $2,
mm-hmm.
oh, are they coming for you? Like that kid in, what was it, Better Off Dead? I want my $2. 312-981-7200. Have you seen any stimulus money arrive yet? They were saying even up to overnight it could have started appearing, but I haven't heard of anybody who said, yeah, it was in my account this morning. How sweet was that?
Yeah, I don't know anyone personally.
Yeah. They're all out partying, probably.
I hope not.
Well, by themselves and socially distanced.
Oh, okay. You know, that's fine.
That's the funny thing. I work over in River North where my studio is, and walking over, there are still a million streets. Well, not a million streets. Clark Street is closed and a few other streets, and there's tents everywhere. Lauren, you're in the city. Are you eating out at all in weather like this? Would you
no.
ever?
Again, I don't even like going to the grocery store in this weather. As much as I would love to continue to support local restaurants, I'm not going to do it in person.
Yeah.
I will order. I will order out
yeah.
all day, every day, if I could.
And get it delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rose says, Rose, go turn on your mic for a second. Have you eaten or you've seen the igloos? I saw one like mini igloo, but I haven't seen the round ones. Are those down on the Riverwalk? Where are those things?
I don't think those are down on the Riverwalk. I believe they're closer up north.
Okay.
Like they're like the outskirts of the downtown northern area, but they're cool. They're heated. I think they're beautiful. They used to do them though right here on the Riverwalk.
But pre-pandemic, that
yeah,
was an idea for the winter
pandemic.
To keep the business going. But I don't understand if I'm in an igloo and it's closed and heated. I guess if I'm with people I'm with, then I'm
exposed
to. But you're still enclosed and spreading the virus. I guess if they're individual igloos, but then a person's still got to come in and give you the food. And
yeah.
I just don't understand how warm does the food stay from the restaurant to the igloo?
I mean, it's like right outside of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're, I don't know, you know, all these mini places downtown that
yeah.
have their little balcony or deck or whatever outside
yeah.
where you can sit
the
and
patio.
Eat. Just like the little, yeah, the little patio, just like the taco place down the street. And it's basically that. They got it all heated up, set it up, and hopefully that your food isn't being microwaved back there. So, you know, it'll stay hot for
yeah.
a few seconds till it gets to your table.
I imagine they try to serve it in something that's heated up too to try to keep it hot until it gets out there. But it's just going to be a tough winter for all of those restaurants to try to get through this and get to the spring when we can be outdoors again and hopefully have more people in person. But it's still going to be a bit of a long haul. As Senator Durbin said, the vaccine rollout is, even though Illinois is kicking butt compared to the rest of the country, most recently we were still leading of all states with the most vaccinations. I don't know if we're still number one, but we're up there. So the state overall is doing a pretty good job, but nationally it's still tough and it's taking time. So expect it to be the summer before you're really doing much stuff around people and outdoors again, and probably into the fall before we're maybe even getting near getting rid of masks, probably 2022 before people aren't recommending you wear a mask. Let's just hope we can get the kids back to school in the fall. All right, it's 1:30. We're going to check the news right now with Lauren Lapka.
It's 31 degrees at 1:30. Good afternoon. I'm Lauren Lapka. A reward being offered for info about a Christmas Eve murder on the city's south side. First, WGN Traffic. Here's Gabe Salgado.
Traffic is sponsored by Zequil Pure Z's. The crash on the westbound JNM's toll at the Elgin Toll Plaza has finally been cleared. Route 17 in Kankakee, however, is still closed between County Roads 21 and 44 due to a crash there. The inbound Dan Ryan is slow from the Stevenson to Roosevelt. It's 17 minutes from 95th to downtown. Outbound is slowing up from the Eisenhower to 18th Street, 59th to the Skyway, and 87th to 95th. It's 20 minutes out to 95th. You have to be up in 5 hours, 2 hours, and you haven't slept. Vicks Z-Quil Pure Z's is a drug-free blend of botanicals with an optimal dose of melatonin that helps you fall asleep naturally and wake up with no next-day grogginess. Z-Quil Pure Z's, naturally superior sleep. Gabe Salgado, WGN Traffic Central.
Community activists are offering a $10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the person who killed a man on Chicago's south side on Christmas Eve. Kyle Hemphill was found shot to death in a car parked near Trinity Hospital in the 9300 block of South Oglesby. One activist has hope that surveillance footage from area cameras will lead to more information. The federal government is starting to put an extra $600 into Americans' bank accounts. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said stimulus check direct deposits started being deposited last night and paper checks started going out today. The relief money is meant to help stimulate the economy during the downturn caused by COVID-19. And Dr. Kathleen Hicks could become the nation's first female deputy secretary of defense. The Biden transition team officially announced Hicks has been chosen for the role. Her appointment is subject to Senate confirmation, of course. Hicks previously served in the Obama administration as the principal deputy undersecretary of defense for policy. Hicks would serve under Secretary of Defense designate Lloyd Austin if he's also confirmed. WGN Sports, a few college football bowl games today. In the Duke's Mayo Bowl, Wisconsin and Wake Forest tied at 21 apiece in the third. Oklahoma and Florida play in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic in Texas, kickoff at 8 o'clock. And a few college basketball games. DePaul's at Connecticut, Penn State at Indiana, and Virginia at Notre Dame. The forecast from the Permaseal Weather Center today, cloudy and breezy, a high of 37 degrees. We will fall near 30 degrees around 5 p.m. tonight, mostly to partly cloudy with a low of 19 degrees. Although it will feel like 10 degrees. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 30 degrees. And then Friday, cloudy, breezy, wintry mix, including freezing rain, ice, and snow with accumulations possible during the day and high of 37 degrees. Your money on WGN. The Dow is up 68 points. NASDAQ up 34 points. The S&P 500 up 5 points. It's 32 degrees in Joliet, 30 in Waukegan, and 32 degrees on the lakefront. I'm Lauren Lapka on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And it is 1:32. Hey, real quick, let's check in with Taryn on 720 WGN. Hey, Taryn, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I understand you maybe have some stimulus money in that bank account?
Oh, yes, I did. Nice. About this morning around between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, you know, I got an alert from my bank that I bank with. And so you got a direct deposit from the IRS this morning, $600.
That's very nice. Now, what are we doing with that, Terry?
I'll probably pay a few bills off. That's about it, yeah.
Not the worst thing to do this time of year, is it?
No, it's not. So,
well, good for you. Well, that's a nice little surprise, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I was very surprised this morning. Very happy.
Yeah, you know. Good. Are you working right now, Taryn? Sounds like you're in an office.
Yeah, I'm working. You know, three of us working remote, but about 10 of us in the office working. Well,
hey, I'm glad you're working. Keep up the faith and better things ahead in 2021.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
All right, Taryn.
You have a good day.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening to WGN Radio. 1:33. Yesterday, I was reading a little bit from a story that you guys heard about cases where people had COVID, and after their recovery or while they were suffering from COVID, people who had no history of mental illness or history of mental illness in their family developing severe psychotic symptoms. 36-year-old nurse, here's from the story. 36-year-old nursing home employee in North Carolina who became so paranoid that she believed her three children would be kidnapped. And to save them, she tried to pass them through a fast food restaurant's drive-through window. That's just one of many stories in the article by Pam Bellick on the New York Times. Hey, Pam, you're on the phone with us. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. And I know I reached out to you yesterday, and you and I started sharing some texts, and you've written many articles on the mental health effects that we've suffered through with COVID-19. And this, please tell me at least this is the most alarming story you've written about what's happened.
Oh yes, I think these cases are the most alarming, and you know the sort of relatively optimistic news, I guess, is that they think that these cases of severe psychosis are likely to be relatively rare. You know, it's not as common as some of the other mental health or neurological effects that we're seeing related to COVID, but. When you think about how many COVID cases we have, you know, worldwide, I think it's up to 82 million now, even a tiny percentage of these cases happening is very troubling. And of course, it's, you know, very difficult for the people who are going through it and their families.
Well, and as tiny as the percentage may be, you list many stories here in your article, and even if that's just a fraction of a percent, it's frightening. A 55-year-old woman in Britain had hallucinations of monkeys and a lion and became convinced a family member had been replaced by an imposter, a 30-year-old construction worker in New York City who became so delusional that he imagined his cousin was going to murder him, and to protect himself, he tried to strangle his cousin in bed. So these aren't just people having crazy delusions. These are dangerous incidents where real harm could have happened.
Potentially, yes. And actually, since the story was published just in the last day or so, I've actually heard from a number of readers who either experienced similar types of, you know, delusions and symptoms themselves, or have a family member who appears to be experiencing that. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to give them some contact information for some psychiatrists who are specializing in this and studying this, and hopefully that will get them, you know, some help.
With the doctors you spoke to, I know that you wrote in the story that the doctors said they're too fragile to be interviewed, but they would describe the cases for you. Where are these cases at now? And first, let me ask you, is it all different, or are these cases that happen while they were suffering for the symptoms, or is this more after they recovered from COVID?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of really interesting things about these cases, and, you know, it just sort of adds to the mystery of you know, so many things that we don't know about COVID and the effect that it has, you know, on the body or the brain. So the most striking thing about these cases is that none of these folks that I wrote about had any kind of mental health history or any kind of family history of mental health issues. So doctors don't know why they were, you know, in other words, there's no indication that they know of that they would have been prone to developing some sort of reaction like this. Also, they were in this sort of age range where we usually don't expect to see sudden psychotic symptoms develop. Typically, psychosis will develop either in, you know, kind of late adolescence or early 20s in people who are developing schizophrenic symptoms. Or sometimes it's kind of a consequence of dementia, or it accompanies dementia in, you know, in elderly folks. So these cases were all for some reason in people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. So that's kind of unusual. And in most of these cases, and of course, you know, we don't know, there could be others that don't fit this pattern, but this particular pattern that I wrote about, these were people who did not actually get very physically sick from COVID. I don't think any of them had to be actually hospitalized for the classic respiratory symptoms that COVID causes. But a couple weeks later, in some cases a couple months later, they just ended up hearing voices and having this sort of psychotic break. So why is that happening? We really don't know, but the best theories from the doctors are not that the virus itself is penetrating the brain. There's very, very little evidence that that happens in any kind of widespread way. But what they think seems to be happening is that it's related to the body's immune response. So it's possible that, you know, folks got infected and their immune system did what it was supposed to do. It defeated the virus. It didn't make them that physically ill. But for some reason, maybe a genetic predisposition, we don't really know, their immune system either didn't quite shut off, remained activated, or the response, the physiological response, you know, sort of created what was essentially a sort of neurotoxin that you know, transmitted to the brain across the blood-brain barrier and caused some sort of neurological issue. That's their best guess at the moment. There's an awful lot more to be learned.
I can imagine, right? With all aspects of this virus, right? We're still learning so much every day. With all of these cases that you learned about, as many as you know about, do the patients all recover with treatment? Have they all been better and feel better now at this point?
My understanding in the cases that doctors have followed up on is that most of these patients have recovered. Certainly, they were able to be discharged from you know, a psychiatric ward, and most of them that I have learned about, and I don't know the fate of all of them, but most of them that I've learned about were able to, you know, kind of return to pretty close to their, you know, normal functioning. There was one man that I'd heard about who I mentioned in the story, who was discharged from the hospital and then, you know, had to go back into the hospital a couple months later, a psychiatric ward. So he wasn't able to recover fully, at least not the first time around. So that is, you know, again, good news. They seem to have found, with a lot of these patients, they had to try several different antipsychotic medications before they found one that worked. And the one that seemed to work most effectively, again, this is a small number of cases, so we don't know if this will help everybody, but risperidone seemed to help a number of these patients. So that's all, you know, good news. There are drugs that are effective and that they appear to be able to, you know, restore these patients to, you know, pretty close to normal functioning. The sort of unknown, again, is that we don't know if there's going to be a legacy that these people will have. Will this make them more prone to other psychological issues later on? Unknown. Will they cycle back again? Unknown. So it's something that people really need to study to, you know, and follow up to see what happens.
And Pam, this isn't brand new. You, in June, you wrote about patients that have suffered from a delirium. In October, you wrote a story that a study shows that 1/3 of COVID-19 patients have had an altered mental state. So this is ongoing and not just some flash in the pan. It seems that there is a real mental toll to COVID. It may be because I think it'd be easy to say, well, there's so much pressure on all of us. We're all in such a maybe altered mental state that you could see where people would suffer breakdowns or things like that. But this isn't just exhaustion, hearing voices, thinking you're going to be killed, thinking people are imposters. This is much more severe than just we're having breakdowns, isn't it?
Yes. And one thing that really is important to note is that other pandemics, including the 1918 flu pandemic and, you know, more recently, SARS pandemic, you know, patients, some, again, small numbers, but small percentages of patients who survived those pandemics also emerged with these types of symptoms. So there's some history, there's some, you know, scientific evidence for a post-viral effect that can, in some cases, affect people neurologically. You know, one of the things that you were just referring to, brain fog, that is actually an issue that I think is going to be a lot more widespread. It seems to be already a lot more widespread than this severe psychosis. I have heard from and written about, you know, many people who are going through this kind of sense of either memory loss or having trouble concentrating, having trouble focusing, and it's very debilitating. These are high-functioning people who had, you know, were gainfully employed and never had any problems, and many of them describe themselves as being, you know, incredible multitaskers before developing COVID, and then in the aftermath, and stretching on for months now for many of them, they're just not able to focus enough to return to their current level of function or work. I would sort of predict that, you know, going into 2021, that is going to be a widespread and ongoing issue. And I know it's causing a lot of concern for doctors and researchers who are focusing on that.
Let's talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We're speaking with Pam Bellick. She's a health and science writer at the New York Times who's writing about COVID-19's toll on the mind. What are the long-term effects we're seeing, and how long will it be before we'll truly know the long-term effects of COVID-19? We'll ask Pam that next. 720 WGN.
Well, you went uptown riding in your limousine with your fine Park Avenue clothes. You had the Dom Perignon in your hand and the spoon up your nose. Ooh, when you wake up in the morning with your head...
Matt Bobala with you, 148, in for Anna DeVlantis here on 720 WGN. Speaking of living large, Pat's on 720. Hey, real quick, Pat, before we get back to Pam, did you get your stimulus too?
Yes, I did, but my bank's website crashed because not only because of the stimulus coming in, but they were also doing their year-end stuff, and it was just too much for the system. So I spent a half hour on hold with the bank for one of their service reps, and she said, yes, that's what the problem was partially the stimulus. And she checked my account, and she said, yes, we see that you've got a $600 stimulus coming in on the 4th.
On the 4th. Oh, okay. So it's not coming in until January 4th. So at least you know it's coming.
Yep.
Excellent. You got plans for that?
Yeah, it's going to go pay some desperately needed bills.
That sounds like a common theme, and I bet a lot of people are going to be doing that with that. And that's okay, too. We got to get fiscally straight. So good for you, Pat. I'm glad it's coming in. You enjoy your weekend and have a happy new year. Pam Bellick is with the New York Times. She's been writing about the mental toll that COVID has taken on people. Pam, let's talk a little bit about the long-term symptoms and the long-term, the brain fog and everything else. What have you heard so far about how long-term we might expect people to still be suffering from different symptoms from COVID?
I think that's a really open question at this point, because, of course, you know, we only have, you know, 10, 11 months now of experience. I have spoken to patients who have been suffering from brain fog and confusion and difficulty focusing for months, for some it hasn't improved, but I also have spoken to patients who have shown improvement over time, and I've spoken to doctors who are opening up neurological clinics specifically to treat these post-COVID patients, and they say that they've seen some recovery over time. So I think it's going to be very individualized. You know, one of the issues is going to be trying to figure out what is the most effective therapy and treatment. If you contrast this with the psychosis we were talking about earlier, the good news for people with that type of, you know, severe psychosis, which again I think is going to be a lot rarer, is that there are antipsychotics. There's medication that in many cases can help. With something like brain fog, it's a lot more nebulous. Our understanding of it scientifically is a lot more nebulous. There's not like a pill that we know that can be taken that can restore memory loss, and so I think it's going to be a combination for people of getting physically as well as they can be. Some of this is related to things like fatigue, for example. So getting stronger physically as much as they can, getting rest, taking things in sort of baby steps, and it may be that there'll be some medication that neurologists can also find that will be helpful. But I think the jury is still pretty far out on that. So it's an open question.
Pam, I don't mean to open up a big old different can of worms here, but as you're describing things, it makes me think a little bit of Lyme disease. There's a lot of controversy about Lyme disease and how true the effects are long term. I've heard some people in infectious disease say, listen, yes, you'll take medication and you'll feel better. But any 40-year-old American, most likely a little overweight, sore, achy, all these things, put on medication for a week, they will feel better because we are at that stage of our lives. Is there some concern that long-term effects from COVID could be mental as much as anything else?
You know, I think that is one of the things that experts are looking at. I have heard from some people who say that they recognize the description of these symptoms as, you know, being something that they say they experienced either from Lyme or from chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia. These are, you know, diagnoses that are, I think, still being explored by neurological experts. And there are studies that are now underway that are looking at people, you know, with those types of symptoms pre-COVID, and sort of comparing those types of patients with the kinds of post-COVID brain fog and neurological issues that that we're seeing in the current group of patients. So I think definitely experts are aware that there are similarities in the descriptions. And they're looking at what can be learned from that patient population and what can be applied to this current population.
With the vaccine coming out, there's a lot of hesitation among some people to get the vaccine. I can only imagine in all of your reporting on all of this stuff, you've run into a lot of conversation over the years about vaccinations. And where do you see the state of, especially in the last 10 years when we've had people, celebrities, saying that people shouldn't get vaccinated for this or that reason, and the, you know, the resurgence of some diseases that were pretty much long gone because we stopped getting children vaccinated. What are your concerns as we head into these different vaccines? And, you know, here and there, we're hearing stories about somebody having a reaction. There was a headline or somebody was sharing something today about somebody catching COVID after they got the vaccination. More detailed into the story, they hadn't gotten the booster shot yet, and that could be expected that could still happen. And quite frankly, from all the infectious disease experts I've talked to, it doesn't mean you can't catch COVID. The 95% efficacy is in preventing you from having serious effects from COVID. So it's not necessarily you won't catch COVID or you won't get the disease. It's that you should not suffer as much from it. And we still don't know what will you shed and how will you spread it and all those things. All of that's still yet to be learned. So where's your head on where everybody's going to be on getting the vaccine?
Well, you've raised a lot of, you know, a lot of points in there. I'll just say, sort of starting from the last first, you know, it's true that we don't know yet enough about whether the vaccine prevents people from being infected or whether it prevents them from transmitting to others. But that is something that is being very seriously studied, and we will know the answer to that. And there's some indication that I think at least one of the vaccines can prevent infection. So, you know, again, that's one of the questions people are going to figure out soon. In terms of vaccine hesitancy, I think a really interesting thing is happening, which is that as people see and learn about how effective these vaccines have been shown to be in the clinical trials, 95% effective for the two that have been approved or authorized for use in the U.S. so far, there a lot of folks who identified themselves as being vaccine hesitant are actually switching and saying that they really want to get the vaccine. And I think we're going to see a large trend like that. That doesn't mean that everybody who has, you know, concerns or is wary or is hesitant is going to, you know, immediately change and want to get vaccinated. But I think we're going to see more and more people being receptive and being eager to get the vaccine because, you know, they are seeing how effective it is. We're going to be seeing that more and more as it gets out more into the community. And it's not, you know, right now, of course, it's just health workers and people in nursing homes for the most part. But very soon, within the next month or two, we're going to see, you know, people are going to know people in the community, in their own families, who have gotten vaccinated. And, you know, if the safety data holds up, which there's no reason to think it won't, they will see that it's safe. And we'll start to see the cases of the new cases of COVID diminish. And that is going to further increase confidence in getting the vaccine. So I think that's going to end up being the state of play. I think it's going to be actually quite encouraging for the vaccine.
Let's
and,
hope so.
Also we've seen, you know, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of vaccine hesitancy for things like measles are because people don't have memories of getting measles because we eliminated them right. with the vaccine.
Yeah.
Everybody knows somebody who's been affected by COVID. Yeah.
Pam Bellick is a health and science writer at the New York Times. Follow her on Twitter at Pam Bellick, B-E-L-L-U-C-K. Pam, we really appreciate your time today. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, and I'm happy to be on.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you in 2021. News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is next on 720 WGN.